Welcome back to The Roundtable. I'm Katie Britton. Leon Lazin was one of the youngest members on Oscar Schindler's List, and in his memoir, The Boy on the Wooden Box, he tells his brave and harrowing tale of surviving the German invasion, living in Poland's Jewish ghettos, his family's time in the concentration camps, and how one man showed compassion and humility by saving him and some of his family members. I spoke with Leon Lason's son, Daniel Lason, about his father's memoir and how his father's history wasn't something they spoke about while growing up.
Well, I think that, as my dad describes towards the end of the book, that when he came to the United States, when he finally made it through the war and was able to make it to the United States, that he decided that he was going to begin a new life in a new country full of opportunity. And so I think that he also wanted to put his experiences that he had just lived through behind him and begin fresh. I think he was still young enough that he was able to do that while my grandparents weren't. But I cannot remember a specific moment growing up where I was sat down and sort of told the entire story. There were bits and pieces along the way, and we were made aware of the story, and we all became more aware of it when my dad began to speak openly about his story, basically after the movie came out.
Was it hard for you to hear your father speak and tell this incredible story of survival to all of these strangers when you hadn't heard the complete thing from beginning to end like that?
It was always difficult to listen to the story. In that particular way, no, it was just difficult to hear it told. But I will say that this book, reading this book, is even more difficult now because he's gone. And even the information in the book, there are some new details that I have become aware of. And unfortunately, I'm unable to speak to my dad about them.
I think there would be something wrong if it weren't difficult to read. And
yeah.
It weren't difficult to read the experiences that your father went through. And he was born and had begun to grow up in the farmlands of Poland, which was, it seemed like such a wonderful and almost idyllic place. I mean, considering where they were in between World War I and World War II.
Yep, he describes just a very happy childhood, playing in the river and playing with his friends, and just very innocent in terms of what was to come.
And he makes a very interesting point that when they heard the Germans were coming back again, they thought it would be like the first time, and that just as during World War I, because it was what they had to go on, was that the Germans wouldn't be that bad.
Yep, that seems to be the feeling that they had in those days, that the Germans, when they came in World War I, were somewhat respectful of the Polish people. But that was not the case the second time around.
First, his father went to Krakow to work in a factory and get better wages. And so he sent for the rest of the family, and there were five children.
Yes.
And living in this small apartment. But eventually, as we see them being moved and forced into the Jewish ghettos, it seemed palatial.
Yes. Yes, where the rooms were packed with multiple families, and one room was divided by a curtain hanging from a blanket hanging from a wire to divide the room. Yes, it seems like they were living in some huge place, but that wasn't the case.
Obviously, we see the transformation that is taking hold of your father and his siblings having to grow up much more quickly, and then how your father sees his own father changing and is no longer a man of pride and has a lot of self-esteem, but slowly getting, well, not even slowly, there's one instance where he stands up for himself to the German soldiers, and then after that day, it was as if he just lost everything.
Yes, he was beaten by young German soldiers. My dad describes them as maybe 18, 19-year-old, beating to the floor and choking him in front of his family. And you know, I don't think that a parent or a father could experience anything worse in front of their family. And that really humiliated him. But my dad also describes that there were moments later on where he was able to regain somewhat of a sense of pride. One particular moment when he was able to reunite the family in Schindler's factory years later was a moment that my dad describes where he saw his father a little bit more proud than he had been.
And who wouldn't be? I mean, it was a chance happening that your great-grandfather got a job in Schindler's factory.
Yes, I mean, he was working at a glass factory across the street from Schindler's factory, and he was asked to open a safe for Schindler, and without any questions, and he was a talented machinist. He was able to open this safe, and that sort of began the relationship with Schindler, and from there he was able to find work for, in the beginning, for him and David, and then eventually he was able to bring my father's sister, Pesha, and my father into the factory later.
And at that time, because they were Jewish, they weren't getting paid if they had work, but the one thing is that if you had a job, you got papers to leave the ghetto, and it made you more valuable.
Mm-hmm. Yes, those papers were extremely important in those days, and unfortunately, my dad describes a moment when his brother, in one of the roundups, did not have those papers and was taken away to be killed right in front of the family, his beloved brother, Tzalik.
And there's this one point in the novel where he had been brought to the boxcars, and Oskar Schindler had been there to get his accountant, and he saw Tzalik there, but he refused to leave his girlfriend.
Yep, that was the case. And, you know, this was my father's beloved brother, the one that he connected the most with, I think the one that he was the most like, the one that was really took him under his wing. And he had fallen in love with a girl, and the girl was on the transport, and he refused to leave his girlfriend at that time, and he was taken away, and they were killed.
And throughout this whole time, your father, as well as some of his siblings, hold out hope that maybe they'll be able to see Tzalik and Herschel again, their oldest brother.
Yes, they do. They do hold out hope, but then later on they find out that no one survived the transport that Tzalik was on with Miriam, and that German troops had killed everyone in their hometown, Narivka, which they left to move to Krakow in the beginning, and that's where the other brother, Herschel, was. Hundreds of his family members and generations of relatives were eliminated.
Having to face the facts of what your life has become, where it had been, and what it's become, your father constantly says that he no longer, and everybody no longer, thought of a future. It was just a matter of getting through that one day.
Yep, just living day to day, not even day to day, minute to minute, where one wrong turn, one unlucky move could mean the end of your life. And even if you did stay alive, trying to find food and trying to find motivation to keep going under these terrible conditions was not easy. And it's just, my dad describes being incredibly lucky to have survived.
He was incredibly lucky, because some of the stories that he says of being bold enough to talk to the German soldiers and go up and try to scooch over into a different line so he isn't separated from his mother, it's incredible. And it seems so unlikely that he was able to do all of those things and get away with it.
Yes, it does. Reading it, I think to myself, wow, you know, he went up to Nazi soldiers as a small child, and he could barely see their belt buckle, and pleaded with them or let them know that he was supposed to be on the list, but he wasn't, and they were going to take him away, and somehow the Nazi guard allowed them to get on the right train. But, you know, my dad, he was a likable guy and a really, you know, charismatic. So, yes, it was incredibly lucky that he was able to, in several different instances, survive.
Him surviving, as well as you said earlier, he and his brothers and sister being able to stay together or find each other again, which just seems so impossible with the hundreds of thousands of other people, and being able to find each other after being separated in specific camps or being in different factories.
Yeah, that's really just something incredible. And Schindler, he played a huge part in that. I mean, without him, that would not have happened, especially given the number of times that they had to move from different places when they liquidated the ghetto, and then the family was moved to Plaszow, the camp, and then they were working at Schindler's factory, and then the war was going poorly, and then Schindler decided he was going to move his factory to Czechoslovakia, and then the family was moved to Gross Rosen, and then from Gross Rosen, they were supposed to go back to Czechoslovakia. But, I mean, I can't even imagine how complicated it was to coordinate all this and keep everyone together. And I think about the joy that they must have felt when they were reunited in these moments, you know, even in the most difficult, terrible conditions, that they were together again.
Right, because there are so many stories that we hear just from your father's point of view, where people just don't come back. Neighbors leave a key for when they come back to their apartment, and they never return, or other people that are living in the apartments with them who are pulled out because they don't have working papers.
Just pulled out and gone forever.
Some of the more uplifting moments in the book are when your father tells of Oscar Schindler coming and stopping and just chatting with him for a couple of minutes, and it makes him want to stand up straighter on his box because he can't reach the machine parts otherwise. And you can only imagine the small boy who is older, but because of malnourishment, isn't as big as a 12 or 13-year-old boy should be. And standing there trying to not fall asleep and do what is required of him.
Yes, it must have been a sight to see my dad, as small as he was, standing on a wooden box controlling the machine, the controls on the machine, and then Schindler coming through the factory at night after being out or having a few drinks and stopping by the machine and talking to my dad or other workers. And then in one instant toward the end where he saw my dad working on the night shift, and my dad at that point was extremely weak, and Schindler saw him and moved him to the day shift. And my dad says that that saved his life yet again, that he was so exhausted in such a state that continuing to work on the night shift was probably going to be the end of him. And Schindler moved him to the day shift.
And your father had been pulled out of school at age 10, so he had no other schooling, but he had this uncanny knack for languages. And he was able to pick them up, and he could blend so well, whether it was Hungarian, Polish, Yiddish. It was quite unbelievable as we were reading, and how he could really become a chameleon, and I think that's what helped him as well.
Yeah, it must have. He had an incredible ear for languages, and he could pick up stuff quickly. And I mean, he's learning languages, they're not easy. Hungarian is one of the hardest languages there is, you know, but yet he's able to, because he takes a liking to a girl, that he's able to begin to speak Hungarian. But then when he's around the Hungarians, or when he's around other people, they begin to speak in Polish so that he can't understand, but that they don't know that his native language is Polish, so he can understand everything. And then when he came to the United States, he learned English without an accent. English is a tough language to learn also. So he had this incredible ear.
The reader is lucky enough to know that your father did get to the United States with his parents. And it helps ease our minds in a way as we're reading through, knowing that this little boy will make it through and make it through all of these horrific experiences. He becomes a high school teacher, and the dynamic of what's happening, of teaching this younger generation and nobody knowing until one day somebody finds him and he gets interviewed for a newspaper, then all of a sudden the outpouring of support is just incredible.
Yeah, that's a kind of a difficult moment in the book where the day after the story, excuse me one second, when it comes out in the LA Times that his story, it's on the front page of the Orange County section of the LA Times in 1992, and one of his students runs up to him the next day and says, "I'm so glad you made it." he had a tremendous impact on a lot of kids at Huntington Park High School. He was teaching, you know, Huntington Park is not a wealthy area. There's a lot of working class people there, and he taught practical skills that could help people find work, and he touched a lot of lives as a teacher. He was also the work experience coordinator at Huntington Park. So he was instrumental in finding people a way to, you know, have a successful existence. And I think many, many people were very appreciative of that. So he touched a lot of people through teaching and later through his speaking, and now in the future through this book.
Well, thank you for sharing your father with us and telling his story to all of our listeners. The name of the memoir is The Boy on the Wooden Box. Daniel, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Again, the name of Leon Lason's memoir is The Boy on the Wooden Box, How the Impossible Became Possible on Schindler's List. It is co-written with Marilyn Herron and Elizabeth Lason. I spoke with Leon Lason's son, Daniel Lason. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.